So this next presentation is about infant birth weight. And again, we're looking at the role of preconception, stressful life events, and substance use. So this builds on the work that we published in the two papers that we published earlier this year in the American Journal of Public Health, and now incorporating and looking at the role of substance use. So again, I have no conflicts of interest or financial relationships to disclose. Very grateful to all the generous funding that was provided to make this research possible. Serves as a roadmap of what I'm going to cover today. So in terms of the scope of the problem, we know that poor obstetric outcomes are a serious public health problem, and in fact, it's rising in the U.S., and it has been over the last several decades, and particularly when we think about low birth weight. And this graph basically shows from 1990 through 2010 exactly what I just stated, which is that this is the percent of babies born low birth weight in the United States. And we can see from 1990 to 2010 that that's been a pretty steady rise, and we're kind of plateauing right here. But this represents about a 6% increase from 1990 to 2010. Low birth weight, we know, increases the risk for premature mortality, not only in childhood, but also in adulthood. And it can also set children on a adverse health trajectory. In other words, being born low birth weight can lead to all sorts of developmental disabilities and other health problems that can occur in childhood and adulthood. So this really made us step back and think about that we really need to consider other risk factors at different points in the life course. And again, potentially preconception stressful life events might be an important thing to understand. And particularly, we need to also understand it in the context of women's health behaviors. And we know that substance use can affect birth weight. And from our own work, maternal stress has been shown to be an important contributor to low birth weight. So there's really a lack of research in this area, really trying to understand alcohol and tobacco use and how it might be a potential mediator in the relationship between preconception, stressful life events, and infant birth weight. But no study has really examined preconception stressful life events in women's health behaviors simultaneously to investigate this potential pathway leading to lower birth weight. So this is a conceptual model that that we've used in our program of research, and I just want to walk you through it a little bit. It's really a model of the stress process and its impact on maternal and child health over the life course. And as you can see, we really we highlight the preconception period as being a very important period of time in the life course and thinking about women's health. Certainly, we're interested in pregnancy and the postpartum period. So what we think is going on is that, you know, that women are being exposed to environmental stress, psychological stress, and this is getting activated biologically through the HPA axis, and women either adapt or they don't. They have either internal or external resources that they're able to draw upon, and they're able to cope, and this all feeds into women's health capital at the time of conception. And then once they conceive, you know, there are certainly lots of things that could occur during pregnancy that may affect maternal mental health, physical health, obstetric outcomes, and infant and child health in the postpartum period. One of the things I want to note here is that substance use comes into play in terms of the behaviors that may occur in the preconception period, but also during pregnancy. So this study aimed to determine the relationships among preconception stressful life events, women's use of alcohol and tobacco prior to and during pregnancy, and infant birth weight. Again, we used the early childhood longitudinal birth cohort. This is, for those of you who missed the previous presentation, this is our nation's only national birth cohort. It's a nationally representative sample of children born in 2001 and their families. The first wave occurred when the child was approximately 9 months of age. And for this study, we had about 9,350 mother-child dyads. Our dependent variable was infant birth weight. So we looked at very low birth weight, less than 1,500 grams, low birth weight, 1,500 to 2,499 grams, normal birth weight, 2,500 to 3,999 grams, and high birth weight, which I'm not going to report on today, but if you're interested, come see me afterwards, and I'd be happy to share those data with you. In terms of substance use, women self-reported their alcohol and tobacco use during the 3 months prior to pregnancy and in the final 3 months of pregnancy. And we operationalized this as never used in 3 months prior to pregnancy, or used in the final 3 months of pregnancy. Our independent variable was preconception stressful life events. Again, defined as maternal report of any of the following. So, again, major life events: the death of a parent, the death of a child, the death of a spouse, divorce, separation, and then fertility problems. All of these have been shown to affect health and mental health. We also considered a number of covariates, including prenatal health and stress, and maternal sociodemographic factors. In terms of our analytic approach, all of our analyses were conducted using survey procedures using SAS, and the data were weighted to reflect the complex sampling design. We used chi-square analyses to do our bivariate analyses, and we did staged multivariable, multinomial regression to examine the impact of maternal exposure to preconception stressful life events on infants' birth weight status, and then whether or not tobacco use and alcohol use then attenuated or mediated that effect on infant birth weight. So in terms of our results, nearly 20% of women experienced a preconception stressful life event before pregnancy. The mean birth weight of the cohort was 3,333 grams. About 1.2% delivered a very low birth weight baby. 5.6 of women delivered a low birth weight baby. In terms of alcohol use before and during pregnancy, you can see here in this slide almost 35% used alcohol in the 3 months prior to conception, 3.3% used alcohol in the final 3 months of pregnancy. Here we're looking at tobacco use before and during pregnancy. You can see here that about 12% of women used tobacco 3 months prior to conception, while 11% used tobacco in the final 3 months of pregnancy. So when we look at this by birth weight status, we can see here that children who were born, or mothers of children who were born low birth weight or very low birth weight, were more likely to use tobacco before pregnancy and also in the final 3 months during pregnancy. So I'm going to focus a lot on tobacco because most of our findings around alcohol did not see a significant effect for alcohol, and I can talk a little bit more about why we think we found that. So this is the regression model looking at the odds of very low birth weight, and so the first model just looks at the relationship between preconception, stressful life events, and birth weight. And so what we can see here is that that there's an increased odds of having a very low birth weight baby if the mother is exposed to a preconception stressful life event. When we add in tobacco use and alcohol use, so alcohol is included in here, alcohol use was not significant. Tobacco use was significant, but it didn't attenuate the point estimate for preconception stressful life events. And then in our final model, when we included all of the covariates, basically we found that preconception stressful life events are still important in terms of infant birth weight, but really what seems to matter is whether or not mom is smoking in the final 3 months of pregnancy. This is really borderline significance. So I would say 3 months prior to conception is probably also important too. And then we also looked at low birth weight. And again, we have very similar findings tobacco did not attenuate the relationship between preconception, stressful life events, and infant birth weight. And here we do see that that if the mother used tobacco 3 months before pregnancy or in the final 3 months of pregnancy, there was an increased risk of giving birth to a low birth weight baby. And this is controlling for alcohol use and a number of other factors. So what are the study strengths and potential limitations? Well, this is the first study to examine the relationships among preconception stressful life events, substance use, and infant birth weight. There are several potential limitations. One of them is survival bias. So the infants that were included in the early childhood longitudinal birth cohort are only infants that survived. So there could be a potential survival bias that could be playing into our results. Again, there may be underreporting of alcohol and tobacco use that may influence our results. And then we also have limited data on stressful life events. There may be other stressful life events that were not captured in our study that may be important in determining birth weight. So what are our conclusions and implications? In conclusion, we found no evidence for alcohol or tobacco use attenuating the impact of preconception stressful life events on birth weight. Rather, they're independently related. So in other words, both preconception, stressful life events, and tobacco use before and during pregnancy were independent risk factors for low birth weight. And so this trend really means that reducing smoking both before and during pregnancy stands to potentially improve birth weight for infants. So in terms of implications, clinicians may want to increase awareness and screening for preconception stressful life events among their patient populations. Smoking cessation efforts should occur before pregnancy and during pregnancy in order to mitigate these harmful effects. And in fact, Healthy People 2020 outlined several objectives aimed at reducing the prevalence of alcohol and tobacco use. However, less than half of providers screen pregnant women for alcohol or tobacco use. So this is an area that we can definitely improve on. I'd like to thank my contributors, my co-authors, to this work. And I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you. We also had birth certificate data. Yes. We used birth certificate data for many of the variables. Yes. I'm sorry if that wasn't clear. Yes.
So I'm wondering, with 40% of pregnancies being unplanned, what your thoughts are about how to target the preconception period?
I think we need to really think about women's health we have got to stop focusing so much on the pregnancy period. It's not an important time, but, you know, really to go back to this idea of women's health capital and in entering pregnancy is so critical. You know, it's not just women's health. We also need to understand men's reproductive health and how that affects birth outcomes. So I think shifting the paradigm to upstream and really focusing more on how are women entering pregnancy? And I think as a start, clinicians could just start asking, you know, have you been exposed to these things? And have you gotten proper help? Have you got, you know, are you getting appropriate support? How are you coping around these things? I think that's a great start. And the fact that we're not asking about tobacco and alcohol use during pregnancy is a huge problem. So, to me, that's a place to start, but we also need to be doing it before pregnancy as well.
Okay.
Sure, yes, please. Absolutely. I definitely think that's right. And so I think what we need to do is to really think about, you know, how do we target those women and, you know, how do we address their reproductive health, because they are becoming pregnant. They are, and they may be unknowingly using substances and influencing, you know, their birth outcomes. And so I think that's a population we need to better understand. Mm-hmm. Yes. So we do know about, that's a great question, and we have not looked at this. We do know about pregnancy and tenderness, and we have not looked at that. So this study was put out by the Department of Education, and so the purpose of the study is really to follow the kids, and so we kind of turned it on its head and have used it as a maternal and child health kind of study, but so we don't have a lot of information about mom's health and mental health. Over the time period. So there are five waves, and so basically the purpose of the ECLSB is to understand child development and readiness for school. And so we do have some general self-reported health and mental health measures. I think the CESD is included, so we do have some stuff on maternal depression, but it's not comprehensive. Absolutely. So the finding that we didn't see an effect for alcohol, I think is interesting, because there is so much research supporting the fact that alcohol is bad for birth outcomes. I think that it feeds into one of the limitations of our study and the fact that we're relying on self-reported use of alcohol. And we also have to think about when this study was occurring. It was occurring in 2001. And so women may have felt like, you know, they didn't want to admit that they were using alcohol before or during pregnancy. Whereas tobacco use, you know, they felt more comfortable saying that. So I think that's where the recall bias and the underreporting may come in, and that might be why we're seeing no effect for alcohol. It's not that alcohol isn't important. I think it's because we have limitations in our study. So thank you. Yes. Again, I'm going to just say it again. I think we need to focus on women's health before pregnancy. There is just so much we can do before the pregnancy period to help prepare women to be in the best possible health that they can be in, the best possible mental health they can be in, so that when they enter into pregnancy, that they have, good birth outcomes. Or better birth outcomes than they would have if they, didn't have intervention. So right now, a lot of our interventions are focused on pregnancy, and I think what we don't know is what would happen if we intervened earlier, before pregnancy, and how would that affect pregnancy complications and low birth weight and preterm birth and delivery method? How would that all be affected? We don't know yet because we haven't done those interventions yet. Okay, all right, thank you.
Thank you.